Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 15th day of January, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Call, and sometimes comments like good grief or give me a break don't go nearly far enough because things in America have gone way too far. I'm referring to a story that I'm going to lead off with today, even though yesterday I saw it and I thought, good grief, this is silly, downright stupid, doesn't even deserve the time of day. But that was before the snowflakes in Congress had a little hissy meltdown. And no, I'm not even talking about the nutcase left. We're used to their shrieking by now. But in this case, it's the rhinos, allegedly Republicans, who probably just bought stock in Gillette. We'll come back to that, maybe, if I can stomach it. But let me introduce the story this way. The United States now has a whole crop of Congress traitors, literally people who aren't qualified to make law about anything. Because literally, obviously, they don't even know what law means. And more importantly, and the reason why I call them Congress traitors, is because they acknowledged up front that they are in fact enemies domestic of the supreme law of the land. In the last few days, we've had entire crops of them announcing that they intend to steal private property, kill people if necessary to enforce their communist ideology. One evil wannabe mass murderer from California even said he would nuke Americans if they didn't go along with his agenda. One of the new traitors came out and said her goal in Congress was to, referring to the duly elected president, quote, impeach the motherfucker. They've got feminist supremacists, black supremacists, trans-homo-LGBT supremacists, and fill-in-the-blank supremacists. We've got Islamic supremacists that openly advocate for mutilation of young girls, honor killings of some of the former, and imposition of Sharia law in utter violation of the Constitution. And then we had this. One elected congressman who actually seems to think there's something to the Constitution, the rule of law, and the history of these formerly free United States, and he said something politically incorrect like this. Quote, white nationalist, white supremacist, Western civilization, how did that language become offensive? Said Representative King. Why did I sit in classes teaching me about the merits of our history and our civilization? Unquote. And I guess that rings more true now than ever. Because the public cesspools obviously aren't teaching about the merits of our history and our civilization anymore. Or stuff like this wouldn't be happening. And in case you missed the original hit piece, as opposed to the trumped-up outrage, the headline from the New York Times said, before Trump, Steve King set the agenda for the wall and anti-immigrant politics. Representative King released a statement on Friday because he was concerned and upset over the fake news hit piece. And he said the following. One of my quotes in a New York Times story has been completely mischaracterized. Here's the context I believe accurately reflects my statement. In a 56-minute interview, we discussed the changing use of language in political discourse, or what now passes for it, I interject. We discussed the worn-out label racist and my observation that other slanderous labels have been increasingly assigned to conservatives by the left, who injected into our current political dialogue such terms as Nazi, fascist, and here your host interjects again the, it's beyond irony, folks, of the fact that the very people who don't know what those words mean should be applying them to themselves if they actually understood history, and exactly the methods and the ends they're pushing for. In the context of which he added white nationalist, white supremacist, and ultimately Western civilization. And how did that language become offensive? Yes, he said, why did I sit in classes teaching me about the merits of our history and our civilization? Continuing, just to watch Western civilization become a derogatory term in political discourse today. Clearly, I was only referencing Western civilization classes. No one ever sat in a class listening to the merits of white nationalism and white supremacy. Although here I do have to interject again, they do now teach the exact opposite, however. He concluded by noting that my record as a vocal advocate for Western civilization is nearly as full as my record in defense of freedom of speech. Which, of course, is now just as verboten in Nazi, fascist, and clearly anything other than, well, what it once was. The rhinos immediately stepped forward and showed why the Never Trump, no longer grand old party, and certainly no longer oriented towards a republic, are in fact the stupid party. No longer merely content to shoot themselves in the foot and reload, House GOP leaders on Monday moved to remove Representative Peter King, Republican of Iowa, from all of his committee assignments following a manufactured firestorm over that bit of yellow journalism that inveterate racists now consider racist. King faced bipartisan criticism, yeah, sure, both wings of that same bird of prey, in other words, after allowing himself to be interviewed by the fake news New York Times. Some non-fake stream pundits are rightfully pointing out that perhaps the most criminally stupid thing Representative King did was to sit down with those liars for an interview. After all, they ask, what did he think was going to happen? He had been a member of the agriculture, small business, and here's the one that matters, folks, judiciary committees. He'd also served as chairman of the House Judiciary Subcommittee on the Constitution and Civil Justice in the last Congress. He very well could have stood as its ranking member under the new socialist, communist, progressive, leftist majority. And all of that pretty well says it all. Bottom line, folks, I guess is simple. Look for more potty-mouth communists to censure anybody that still actually thinks the oath they took to the Constitution is worth a, well, I can't say it, but they will. Oh, and if you get the idea that this might just strengthen the case for impeachment, and we don't need any stinking, well, you know what, blankety-blankin' evidence, you're probably on the right track, too. We need to follow that up with some real, real racism that, of course, isn't, because if it's politically correct enough, it goes clear around to the other side of the curve. South Africa has created 100 positions for blacks-only doctors. The spokesbigot for South Africa's KwaZulu-Natal Health Department said that South Africa, quote, remains an unequal society with limited opportunities for self-development for those who were historically depressed, and that thus the blacks-only requirement was the, quote, morally and socially right thing to do. However, the politically correct bigoted quota was not met, and the spokesperson was forced to admit, oh, the humanity, that they had to hire non-black African doctors. And yeah, I'm going to say it, folks, at the risk of being outed by the New York Times, do you think just maybe, given that they had this bigoted requirement for blacks only, that they were willing to drop the standards just a bit to meet their already racist quotas? Forget the content of their character or the color of their skin. All of that does make me wonder about the content of their cranium, however. But hopefully most listeners already know better than to go to a socialist, politically correct healthcare facility anyway, if there's any other option. I guess it's not enough that racial tensions in South Africa have already gone over the top because of the proposed legislation to seize land, without compensation, of course, it's the communist way, from guess what color of farmers. And if they don't like it, yeah, they kill them. And it sounds like a lot of them have already been killed, just because they're white. No bigotry, though, of course, in progressive South Africa. Which brings me to another story exposing over-the-top hypocrisy, and this one, too, I originally wasn't going to do. And the reason I think will be obvious in just a second, an investigative reporter that I have a great deal of admiration for because she's been on the ball with so many things that the Waystream doesn't want you to know, from the Las Vegas cover-up to the Islamic invasion, Laura Loomer, who recently handcuffed herself to Hypocrisy Central's New York City offices after being deplatformed by Twitter, is at it again, and this time she really may have topped herself. Now, when I first saw this story, folks, my initial thought was probably like a lot of yours is going to be, hey, she violated private property. She climbed a fence onto private property. She was trespassing. What the heck is going on here? What kind of a protest is that? And then I realized, wait a minute. These are the very same people who don't think you have a right to own private property. They want to steal your private property, and furthermore, they're more than happy to invite people to violate your private property anytime it suits their political ends. So yeah, Loomer was making quite a statement when she climbed a wall with some illegals at Nancy the hypocrite House Speaker Pelosi's house, set up a little mini tent city, and staged a protest. After all, she said, quoting the House hypocrite, everyone is welcome, right? And can you believe this, folks? Rather than giving these illegals sanctuary, as she advocates for all of you folks, law enforcement gave them tickets for trespassing. Hey, Nancy, tear down that wall. Laura Loomer did get a lot of coverage, though. Her little canopy was decorated with the word immorality in great big red letters, and to it were attached lots of photos of Americans killed by illegal aliens, including Kate Steinle. Yeah, they were certainly trespassing, but no, they didn't kill anybody. Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit points out the hypocrites were out in force, too. Montel Williams demanded that Laura should be tased for her actions. And though they note, Twitter certainly didn't ban him for calling for violence. And since she's Jewish to boot, it was anti-Semitic violence at that. I guess in new beyond bigoted America, being white trumps being Jewish. So does that make it okay to hate Jews if they're also white, Montel? Or is it maybe just because she actually believes in the Bible? You gotta admit, these thinking beyond bigoted, racist, politically correct progressives are so over-the-top intellectually inconsistent, it really is hard to extrapolate how they'll rationalize their next hissy fit. It's not, however, hard to predict what will set them off. And of course, anything that exposes their hypocrisy is right on target there. And no, folks, let me be clear here. There are lines that I suggest, as one who understands and believes in the messages of Scripture, that we shouldn't cross. Thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness. And yeah, we have a whole new crop of Congress traitors who've already pre-announced they're going to do all of that, and more. We'll invade your house, we'll steal your right to defend yourself from us. Constitution and Bill of Rights be damned. And keeping people off of your private property, and especially building a wall at the southern border to do so, is immoral. My wall, on the other hand, says Nancy, is a whole different thing. How dare any of you slaves trespass on her private property? And don't even think about serving her with a red flag protective order and demanding her goons be disarmed. Speaker of the horrors, Nancy Pelosi has proven it again. Some animals really are more equal than others. So Laura Loomer gets an A+, not only for showing Americans what that really means, but just how far gone things already are. On the completely other side of the socialist spectrum, however, the city and county of Denver, Colorado, has again demonstrated that San Francisco isn't the only place run by absolute idiots and nutcases and needle-tossing sidewalk defecators. You'd think San Francisco would serve as a bad example. But if you thought that this mindset was capable of learning from history, well, take a look at Denver. Mark Meckler at Pathos puts it this way. Just when you think politics couldn't get any more disgusting, it can. Like, really? But no, your host has to point out, in fairness, Denver didn't do what San Francisco did and legalize pooping on the pavement. De facto or de jure, it just decriminalized it, cutting the penalties way back, and you can guess, folks, the enforcement even a bit further. Which is, as your host points out all the time, exactly what selective enforcement is all about. And arguably, we'll come back to this, unintended consequences, too. There has been quite a bit of slanted coverage on this one, though. Denver's 9news.com TV station pointed out when they verified the story, no, Denver didn't legalize public urination. They just reduced the penalties dramatically, along with, almost certainly, the level of enforcement. Denver Socialist Mayor Michael Hancock and city officials explained the new reduced penalty ordinances are designed to protect immigrants, both legal and the other kind, from what they call unintended consequences, which might include deportation, they note, if you're caught breaking an important ordinance or law. Things that wouldn't apply, in other words, in third world cities, like Denver seems to aspire to be, and San Francisco has already achieved. Oh, and please, don't you dare point out that Donald Trump was right when he called certain places shitholes, unless you want to be banned on Twitter. So the extinct ordinances actually passed mid-year last year, but just now kind of raising a real stink, include all kinds of violations of Denver's municipal code, punishable once by up to a year in jail and a maximum fine of just $1 less than $1,000. But the new rules, which also apply to homeless folks, establish two classes of violations. And the lesser ones, you can guess what they include, now carry no fine and a max of 60 days in jail. But don't worry, nobody's going to be sentenced to that anyway. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. All right, a question for the class. This is not the kind of class you're going to see in the public cesspools, and that's ringing more and more true all the time now, isn't it? Quiz time. is Denver more or less likely now to see an increase in the number of people defecating, urinating, and probably doing other things like tossing needles? Why not? Than before they became a sanctuary for stupidity? Well, hint. Watch your step. Oh, yeah, I'll say it. And don't step into cultural diversity. And I guess after all of that, we ought to wrap up this sequence with one more story from the toilet paper of record, the New York Times, which last week seemed to have felt the need to re-wallpaper over the Robert Mueller witch hunt and Whoremeister James Comey cover-up. The big lead was that after President Trump fired the Whoremeister, the FBI decided to launch an investigation into whether President Trump's, quote, own actions constituted a possible threat to national security, and whether he had been working on behalf of Russia against American interests. And knowing that most of their readers, in particular, don't go much beyond the headline or maybe the first paragraph or two, you had to go all the way down to paragraph 9 to find this admission. That there was, quote, no evidence has emerged publicly that Mr. Trump was secretly in contact with or took direction from Russian government officials. Unquote. Ho-hum. And what are they trying to pull here? Leftist, but actually honest investigative reporter Glenn Greenwald, in his latest piece for The Intercept, though, set the record straight. The federal bunglers of instigations again overstepped their authority. And as he points out at some length, that ain't nothing new. It's just that they've now raised political assassinations to an art form. He even calls the FBI anti-democratic and dangerous. And maybe, given his demonstrated integrity, we can still forgive him for not knowing what form of government the United States was once supposed to have. One of the things that the fake news smokescreen is covering up is the continued meltdown of the U.S. economy. The rest of the world, of course, is way ahead anyway. Normally, this might have been at the top of the list for real news today, but given that we talk about it all the time anyway, I'll just lay some of the story out with major headlines. Starting, of course, here, courtesy of Zero Hedge, the collapse in global M1, that's a primary money supply measure, has signaled a worldwide recession has arrived. The annual change in central bank liquidity, it says, is now negative. And as any reasonable or Austrian economist can tell you, that's not a good thing. As Tyler Durden puts it, when it comes to markets, where the events of December were a vivid reminder that just as QE blew the world's biggest asset bubble, so will quantitative tightening deflate it. From the banksters themselves, Wells Fargo just reported the worst mortgage numbers since the financial crisis. Residential mortgage applications and pipelines both tumbled, sliding to just shy of the post-crisis lows recorded late in 2013. And following a dismal earnings report from Citi yesterday, that is if you read it carefully enough, J.P. Morgan has reported a huge trading miss today as well. The bank's FICC Group's revenue has plunged to their lowest since the financial crisis, and earnings per share of $1.98 were way short of the $2.20 consensus. That's the first miss by J.P. Morgan in 15 quarters. And you can look all through these reports and notice that they can't really blame the Fed this time for their shortcomings, probably because everybody knows they're all on the same team. And this is kind of a tough pill to swallow, too. Ahead of the government shutdown in December, says another piece from Zero Hedge, one bankster after another, desperate to defend their oh-so-bullish takes on the economy, predicted that the tiny, partial government shutdown would barely have any adverse effect on the U.S. economy. Certainly hasn't had much adverse effect on Big Brother. But now that the shutdown has entered its 25th day, extending the longest shutdown on record, it appears that the so-called economists are beginning to change their mind. And now even the Trump administration is estimating that the cost of the government partial shutdown may be twice as steep as the pretty much zero that was originally forecast. Nobody, of course, is going to point out the positive effects and note that if we really want to avoid an economic recession, maybe the thing to do is just keep it closed. Really closed, though. In no small part, obviously, because everybody, including the administration economists, are now looking for a scapegoat to blame the increasingly undeniable, inevitable collapse on. Because you know they're not even going to be allowed to point in the general direction of the unconstitutional Federal Reserve and fake fiat dollar. On to a couple bits of analysis. Michael Pinto asks, has the Federal Reserve already gone too far? Guess what, folks? The answer is yes. His 20-point inflation, deflation, and economic cycle model, he says, predicts the Fed has already tightened enough to bring on the inevitable recession. History's proven this is where stocks can lose half or more of their value. And yeah, folks, that's what the fake news will hype, but it's not even remotely the real story. None of it was real, says Jeffrey Snyder. The recovery narrative has now been aborted as the euro-dollar reality re-emerges. His piece is quite detailed and long with a lot of charts you can't see on radio anyway. We're starting to get a better sense, he writes, of what really happened to turn everything so drastically in December. Not that we hadn't suspected while it was all taking place, but more and more, now that we're in January, the economic data for the last couple of months of 2018 backs up the market action. He describes in some detail an example he says he often uses. Say a Swedish firm intends to export goods to a Japanese buyer. Trade is made efficient and flexible, therefore probable and manageable, by the euro-dollar system that's in between them. It mediates the different characteristics of each disparate currency system so as to standardize and harmonize the terms. The explosion of globalization and trade alongside the advent of the euro-dollar system, he writes, isn't dumb luck. This euro-dollar requires banks to be in the middle offering them. But if those banks just happen to notice how Japanese firms suddenly aren't much interested in Swedish goods, or any goods for that matter, that can be a problem for more than just Sweden and Japan. But that's especially true if the one giving off those weak signals for banks in the middle is China, rather than just Sweden or Japan, because if that one goes into reverse, the pullback can become much more generalized. If Sweden goes sour, you get out of Sweden. But if China goes sour, get out of everything. And Chinese trade figures for December were bad. So the direction of the global economy is pretty clear. All of this, he concludes, and he's not alone for sure, is the predictable outcome of a flat yield curve, especially now at or around under 3% nominal. U.S. Treasuries and Eurodollar futures have been saying this all along throughout the entire run of reflation number 3, that the chances the global economy was going to soar were nowhere near the chances it was going to sour. And December was extraordinarily sour, with the Eurodollar banks getting to taste it first and spread it around. Yeah, he says the Federal Reserve can claim all they want that the economy is strong, but China, again, begs to differ. And Michael Snyder at the Economic Collapse blog picks it up there. China's numbers released Monday not only surprised analysts, but they were absolutely stunning. More and more confirmation that the global economy is slowing down substantially. There's just no way to spin these numbers to make them look good. Data showed Chinese imports fell 7.6% year-on-year in December, while analysts had predicted a, are you ready, 5% rise. Exports dropped 4.4%, confounding expectations for a 3% gain. And since China now accounts for more total global trade than the U.S. does, the fact that the numbers for the number one economy in the global hub are falling dramatically is a major warning sign. And it's not just China, of course, as we've already explained. We just witnessed the worst industrial output numbers in Europe in nearly 3 years, and sales of goods from iPhones to automobiles are all slowing. And all of these are exactly the types of news stories we would expect to see, or maybe not hear much about, but still, they're out there, if a major global recession was right at our doorstep. Snyder, too, has a lot of housing numbers. They're horrific, and basically they're horrific. Snyder, too, has a lot of housing numbers. They're horrific, and basically, he says, very reminiscent of what we witnessed back in 2008. And not only that, horror of horrors, employers are cutting back on hiring new college grads for the first time in 8 years. The National Association of Colleges and Employers shows... This time, with a 1%... With a 1.3% decrease from last year, and while a survey from Monster.com found that of 350 college students polled, 75% don't yet have a job lined up. Well, in that case, you can probably pin at least part of the blame on totally worthless degrees, like doctorates in transgender pedophile studies and the miracles of political correctness in Venezuela, Zimbabwe, and North Korea. Michael Snyder concludes with a little bit of what can you do about it, especially when we know what's coming. And the answer, of course, is get ready. I sometimes call it the 4 G's, groceries, gold, guns, and of course, God. He ends with a story of going to the grocery store and again being shocked, noting that when the Federal Reserve says we're in a low inflation environment, I always wonder what world they're living on. Bottom line, 2019 is off to a pretty rough start, and things are likely to get a whole lot rougher. Thanks for joining us, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.